Still good morning to Rabbi Reese in a different time zone, Chicago. We are underway with week number two of Yeshivas Ben Semestrim, and it is a privilege to have Rabbi Reese here with us. Some of you know that Rabbi Reese spends much more of his time in Chicago as the Av Basin of the CRC, and at the same time is able to, whenever possible, whether it be personally or virtually now, participate in the learning and the teaching that goes on in yeshiva, whether it be to the Talmidim at large, to the Kol Hora, and it's a privilege that we are fortunate to have a continued connection to our yeshiva that Rabbi Reis has maintained. And for those of us who have been here for a few years, it's extraordinarily unique to have Rabbi Reis consistently participating in the teaching, because Rabbi Reis was the predecessor of Rabbi Penner as a Menahel of the Yeshiva before he moved to Chicago, and the fruits of Rabbi Reis's efforts and the reverberations of all the changes and improvements that he implemented during his tenure at YU in Washington Heights proper are still felt on a daily basis, whether you know it or not, because you came after that point. We are all the beneficiaries of his dedication to the Yeshiva, and that we continue to experience on occasions like this. Thank you very much, Rabbi Reis, for joining us, and we look forward to this year.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schnell. Thank you for that very kind introduction. The topic today is Lo Sachmod, various practical applications of what is, for many, kind of a little bit of a confusing last of the Aseres HaDibros, that we understand the prohibition not to covet, but it's a little bit difficult to figure out how that plays out practically. How much is a person capable of controlling their emotions in terms of what they desire? When does one violate this prohibition? It must be pretty important. If it's one of the Aseres HaDibros, we know that Rav Sadia Gaon, quoted by Rashi al-Chumash, talks about how the Aseres HaDibros encapsulate the entire Taryag mitzvos, that these are 10 general categories of mitzvos from which you can derive so many other principles of the Torah. So the Sachmon is not only one of the mitzvos of the Torah, but as one of the Aseres HaDibros, it's a major principle of the Torah as well. It's important to understand what it's all about. We have two psukim in the Dibros Rishonos and the Dibros Achronos that describe the prohibition. In Parshas Yisrael, we're told, Lo Sachmon Beis Reyecho, you shouldn't covet the house of your fellow, of your neighbor. Lo Sachmon Eishes Reyecho, Ve'abdova Amoso, V'sharo V'chamaro V'chosho Le'Reyecho. And similarly, you shouldn't covet the wife of your fellow, not the servant, not the maid servant, not the ox, not the donkey, not anything that belongs to your fellow. And Sefer Devarim, Parshas Ve'eschanon, there's an additional iser, which is tacked on to the prohibition of Lo Sachmon. Lo Sachmon Eishes Reyecho, we start with that again. You shouldn't covet your neighbor's wife, your fellow's wife, Lo Sisa Ave Beis Reyecho, but also you shouldn't desire. In addition to not coveting, there's also a prohibition of not desiring the house of your fellow. So the Meforshim explain, and the Poskim explain, the Rambam codifies, Sefer Chinuch codifies, this is also found in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Geneva Gezela, that there are two separate prohibitions. One is Lo Sisaveh, you're not supposed to desire that which belongs to your fellow, and the other is Lo Sachmon, you're not supposed to covet. There are a number of midrashim, midrashei halacha, and the Mechilta Derashbi, which spell out the parameters of this halacha. It's interesting, you find on some level more of a detailed explanation of the parameters of this halacha in the midrashei halacha. We always speak about how to be a true Talmid Chacham, you should go to Shas, go to Babli, go to Yerushalmi, but you should also go to the midrashei halacha, the Sefra, the Sifrei, the Mechilta. There are a lot of halachas that are found there. They're not always repeated in the Gemara. Lo Sachmod is really a primary example. You go through the Torah Shlema by Rav Kasha, for example, and you find a tremendous amount of rich midrashic material with respect to Lo Sachmod. So some of it is quoted by the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan, Simen Shin Nun Tes, that's where this appears in the Shulchan Aruch and Chosh Mishpat. So he quotes from the Mechilta, that all of the items that we speak about, perhaps with the exception of coveting a person's wife, which is sort of a unique category, but otherwise, when we speak about the home and the field and the donkey and the ox and so forth, so we have ma prat davar shehu kone o makne af a klal davar shu kone o makne. We have over here a klal prat uklal. Lo sachmon is the klal, and then we have the specific items are the prat, the koshia, the riecha is chazu uklal. So we therefore extrapolate from the prat, from the specific cases that are given, the nature of the issur. It has to be something which can be bought and sold. Something that can be bought and sold is subject to the prohibition of lo sachmon. So question whether the case of eishes riecha is an exception to the rule, or whether we say that on some level is a kinyan kiddushin. So therefore, that's also included in the category. A person can't be makne his wife to somebody else, but if he's migarish his wife, so that creates the potential for a kinyan for somebody else to make. There's a ran in Maseches Nedarim that talks about the nature of kinyan kiddushin is a woman is sort of mafkir herself, so somebody can be kone her, at least in the context of how we understand the kinyan of kiddushin. So therefore, you put pressure on somebody to be megarish his wife, so that creates the situation where she makes herself available. So in that sense, you can say that there is kind of a kone umakne element with respect to Ishis Riehu as well. That's a question. This at least gives us some sort of sense of the parameters of the halacha. You might think about it in the sense of what types of coveting are, you know, included in the prohibition. For example, if I want somebody else's job and I engage in machinations in order to secure another person's job, so generally speaking, a person doesn't have the ability to sell a job. A job, a person gets hired for a job and so forth. It's not something which is bought and sold. We had a case here in Illinois of somebody who was accused of selling a senatorial seat. So you covet to be a senator. But pashtus is that even if you figure out how you're going to run against somebody and you're going to displace them from their position, it's not a dava kone umakne. You know, sometimes if a person engages in machinations to push somebody out of a job and to take their job, I think there's a famous book, a short story, you know, about this. That it's not a nice thing to do. It might be a violation of ani amahapech b'charoa in certain circumstances. Other violations, probably not lo sachmo. So in terms of inyana diyoma, if somebody else is legitimately elected to a position, let's say president of the United States for argument's sake, and you engage in machinations, you try to take it away from them. So it seems like a nasty thing to do. Not sure if it would be, if a presidential position is something which can be bought, hopefully not, according to the Mechilta, probably wouldn't be included in Lo Sachmod. I could imagine other problems with instigating riots and things of that sort, if relevant to one's machinations. But in terms of Lo Sachmod, probably according to the Mechilta, not quite in this category. Now, the Ibn Ezra asked the question, how is it that we can legislate a person's thought process to say that you're not allowed to even desire something? It's understandable that a person can control their actions on some level. People have both machshavos belevish. People have all kinds of thoughts that pass through their head, and we hope that, you know, we say HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mitzarif Machshava Ra'a L'Maaseh. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't hold us accountable, generally speaking, for our machshavos, with the exception of Avodah Zarah, for example, the Gemara discusses. But as a general matter, we don't really hold people accountable for their machshavos. This is a question that's asked by the Ben Ish Chai. He has a sefer. She discusses some of the rules of Lo Sachmon at length. The sefer is called Rav Brochos. It's based on a pasuk in Mishlei, Shemunos Rav Brochos. So he named his sefer Rav Brochos, and he has this discussion: how can you hold a person accountable for a thought process alone? So the Ibn Ezra gives an answer. The Ibn Ezra says that yes, the Torah very much wants to sensitize us to having the proper perspective in the world, that we're supposed to understand that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us is what we're entitled to, what we're meant to have, and what other people have is what they're meant to have. And just like if you had a commoner or a peasant and they would see a procession where the princess of the kingdom was coming through, they wouldn't have a thought process that they're going to marry the king, the princess, because they understand they're a commoner. They're not in the chain of potential suitors. It just wouldn't even enter their mind. They're going to have a desire to be married to the princess. It's so far out of the realm of anything which is realistic or rational. So too, we're supposed to have that thought process with respect to any possession which is owned by somebody else, that it's completely outside of the realm of reality for us to covet such an item. Now, the truth is that nowadays, that mashal might have to be revisited, because we live in a more egalitarian society, where even if you have royalty, there's the possibility of a Princess Diana, a possibility of somebody maybe from outside of the inner circle coming in and finding a way to marry royalty. But Ibn Ezra gives another example, which I think would be true even in the modern age, where there are more opportunities available to peasants and commoners, and that is for a person to covet their mother. A person's raised by their mother, they could have a very pretty, nice-looking mother, but it would never dawn on an individual to have a thought process, oh, maybe I'll marry my mother. We would consider such a person to be a shota. They would have to go into a mental asylum, because that's not a normal thing for a human being to desire. Why is that? Because it's understood that there are certain boundaries, that there are certain parameters that are set up in this world, and a person doesn't marry their mother. So the Ibn Ezra gives that as another example. So the Torah is saying that by the same token, we're supposed to understand anything, a wife, a house, a donkey, anything that anybody else owns, v'kol asher l'reyecha, so it's off limits the same way that our mother is off limits to us. A person has to be sameach b'chilko, as he points out, that Ibn Ezra uses that lashon very explicitly, that it's essentially emphasizing the centrality of this notion of being sameach b'chilko. This is all that a person really needs in order to have, you know, a sense of comfort, a sense of happiness, a sense of equilibrium in life. But it's so difficult for people. You always ask, why don't people just do this automatically? It's much easier than having to make millions of billions of dollars in order to be rich. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us, Ezu Asher Asameach B'chilko, all you need in order to be rich is to be happy with what you have. So most people, unfortunately, have the mentality, yeah, sure, I'll be Sameach B'chilko as soon as I get my chelek, because they feel they don't have their chelek yet. So they have to keep on striving away. They have to keep on agonizing. They have to keep on being frustrated that they don't yet have what is coming to them. So the Torah is teaching us an important principle. What you have is what's coming to you. This is what you're supposed to have. You're supposed to be happy with it. Beinu Mechaya in this Kara Kemach that points out, it's quoted in the Torah Shlema, really we have two bookends to the Aseres HaDibros. We have at the very beginning, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, and we have at the very end, Lo Sachmod. So he says that the two really correspond to each other. They're both emphasizing the same principle. In other words, Midrashim that are very, very strong, they talk about that if you violated Lo Sachmod, it's as if you violated all of the Aseres HaDibros. By the same token, if you keep Lo Sachmod and you're careful to fulfill this mitzvah properly, you have the requisite mindset, so then it's considered kilu kiyem kol haTorah kula. It's considered as if you have fulfilled the entire Torah, because this is a fundamental mindset, he explains, that a person who covets possessions of others, the mevatel the anochi, the mevatel the mitzvah of having faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You have faith that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in charge, so then you don't complain with what you have, because you understand that it comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you are not satisfied with what you have, so it means that you don't have either a trust or an acceptance of the reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and how he manages the world with perfect wisdom and assigns to everybody exactly what it is that they're supposed to have, whether in terms of their spouse, whether in terms of their house, whether in terms of anything else. So therefore, this is a fundamental bookend to Aseres HaDibros for that very, very reason. The Ibn Ezra's ideas is a very, compelling one in terms of just understanding the hashkafa behind it. But at the same time, the Rav Brachos asks, but in terms of giving somebody an Aveira, how well can a person control their mind? The Sefer Chinuch seems to indicate, he talks about this mitzvah, why not? You just condition yourself to act in a certain way, and your mind will be able to follow. So you don't take actions trying to take away the possessions of somebody else. So that will create the right type of a mindset. So the truth is that in terms of the definition of when lo sakmod is violated, when lo sisave is violated, the Aruch HaShulchan points out that there is a medrash that says, clearly that lo sakmod is only violated when you have a maisa, meaning that it starts off as a thought process, but until you actually go and obtain the item that belongs to your fellow, you haven't violated lo sakmod. That's the way that the Rambam paskins the halacha. It's really the way the Ravid paskins the halacha as well. We speak about this inyan in Hilchos Gezeila Baveda, Perek Aleph, halacha tes. And the Aruch HaShulchan explains that this is based on the pasuk in Parshas Ekev, lo sakhman kesef is zahav aleihem. You shouldn't covet gold and silver, and then you take it into your possession, you secure it. So we see from here that there is a notion of securing something, taking possession of it in order to violate lo sakhmod. So that's the Rambam paskins. There is a slight difference between the Rambam and the Ravid with respect to one very important detail. When the Rambam discusses the halacha, he says, how do you violate lo sakhmod? You covet an item so badly that you make all kinds of machinations and you exert all kinds of pressure upon the other person to sell you their item. And then they sell you the item in the end in a fashion in which they do it voluntarily, along the lines of what the Gemara of Babasa talks about, tell you, reserves, vine, zvine. It's a valid sale. It's a valid sale. We're not looking to cancel the sale at the end of the day. At the end of the day, you made a valid sale, but explains the Rambam, you did it in an improper fashion because the person didn't want to sell this item, and you just badgered them and bullied them and harassed them until they were willing to do so. So therefore, you violated lo sakhmod. But you don't get malchus, explains the Rambam, because it's a lav she ein bo maisim. It's a lav that does not come with an action that was performed. It's a lav that you performed with your heart. So the Ravid has a different approach in which he asks two kashas of the Rambam. He says, how can it be a violation of lo sakhmod if in the end the person willingly sells you the item in a fashion of a rotsa ani? So the Ravid says it must be talking about a case where it didn't satisfy the parameters of Talyu Rizovin Zvine Zvine, that it would be a valid sale. Must be talking about where the seller did not say rotsa ani. But the seller didn't say rotsa ani, guess what? It's not a valid sale. So then the sale has to be voided. And the money will be returned to the purchaser, and the item will be returned to the seller. So as explains the Ravid, why you really don't get malchus? He said, how could you say it's a lav she'ein bo maisa? He asked, that's the second question he asked in the Rambam. Lav she'ein bo maisa, ein lecha maisa gedola mizu. What do you mean? According to the Rambam, it's a valid sale. According to the Rambam, the sale doesn't even get rescinded. So it's a complete maisa. That the person who was pressuring the other one to sell their item and was figuring out how they can satisfy their desire actually achieved the result of their labors, namely that they were able to obtain the item that they had coveted so badly. It came into their possession. It was given to them. It was transferred to them. That's a maisa, says the Ravid. So therefore, he says, that can't be why there wouldn't be malchus. I'll give you a better explanation, says the Ravid, as to why there's no Malkus, because it's a lav sheyesh bo tashlumin. It's a lav anitan le tashlumin. A lav that is given over for compensation, like gezela. It's a subset, according to the Ravid, really, of gezela. You steal something, reishiv is a gezela. You share gazol, you have to return the item that you stole. So that's why you don't get Malkus. So the Magid Mishnah over there explains that the one kasha of the Ravid really answers up the other kasha of the Ravid, they sort of cancel each other out. He explains that according to the Rambam, it needs to be a valid sale because the Isser is one of Hishtadlus. The Isser is not in receiving the item. It's in the measure of pressuring and badgering and harassing and efforts that a person places into their endeavor of securing the item that that they covet. And a hishtadlus is not considered to be a maaseh because it's not a specific deed. It's a process of realizing one's machshava, and therefore that's not considered to be a maaseh. But at the same time, in order for the hishtadlus to be the requisite measure, that it would incur a violation, it has to lead to the person receiving the fruits of their labors of actually having the item that they had coveted so much at the end of the day and being able to keep it. It would have to be a valid sale as well if they're not able to orchestrate events in such a way that they would be able to keep it in the end. So that wasn't the requisite hishtadlus. Therefore, it's the ein b'maisa, but it also has to be a valid sale. This articulation of the Magen Mishnah is perhaps fine-tuned, shall we say, by later authorities, most notably the Stipler Gaon in his Birchas Peretz. You also find a similar approach by Rav Chaim Moser in the Achiezer and others as well. But the way the Stipler Gaon puts it is that it's a lav shein bo maaseh, not so much because of the fact that it's not to the acquisition of the item that's the yisur, but rather the shtadlus. The Stipler Gaon puts it a little bit differently from the Magen Mishnah. That's not exactly the way he would put it, he says. But the better formulation, he says, is that the Isser is not the Hishtadlus, but it's the Machshava itself. It really is the Machshava. The thing is, and this is what the Rav Brachos picks up on as well, the Machshava is not one that we penalize if it is not a very played out Machshava. What's wrong with this Machshava is that the person took that Machshava and they acted upon it in such a way that the Machshava came very much to fruition. It was such a strong Machshava that it was manifested to a person pressuring and badgering and harassing the other person until the other person was willing to sell the item. So that is a tanai in the Machshava, says the Stipler Gaon. And then the Stipler Gaon uses another lashon, says it's a shear in the Machshava. It's a shear, that the measure of the Machshava that is necessary in order for the Machshava to be a culpable one of Los Achmon is that when one actually secures the item. But the securing of the item, that's not an Isser. That's a completely legitimate sale. It doesn't even have to be returned. At the end of the day, it's a legitimate sale, but the person is culpable for having a thought process to figure out how they're going to finagle a legitimate sale out of somebody who did not want to part with this item, who did not want to sell this item, did not want to transfer the item to them. Now, this all explains very well the idea of Los Achmon. It happens there's another issue, which is that of Los Isave. Los Isave seems to be violated even just with the thought process alone. We don't have a pasuk like we did of Los Achmon Kesef Isahav Alehem. We don't have a similar pasuk with respect to lo sisave. So here, the Magen Mishnah, in explaining what the Ravid's view towards lo sisave would be, so he explains that according to the Ravid, there has to be that it's not just a taiva that oh, I desire this item. It's a taiva that just to play itself out a little bit that you wanted to, that you're thinking to yourself, what process you're going to follow, what plan you're going to implement in order to convince the Bailim, the owners, to sell you this item against the will. According to the Ravid, it's completely against the will. Without saying Rotsa'ani, there's a Tosus in Sanhedrin and Daf Kopei Amud Beis that also seems to have this distinction of the Ravid. It's a complicated discussion in a few Gemaras in Baba Metzia, Daf Pei Amud Beis, and Sanhedrin and Daf Kopei about whether Los Achmod is violated only when money is not given over. The Gemara indicates that people have a conception, it's a question whether it's a misconception, that Los Achmon is only below Demei, Mashmalei Leinshi. It's a Mashma that if you don't give over money, so that's when you violate Los Achmon. But if you gave over money, so then there shouldn't be a violation of Los Achmon at all. So Tosfos in one day up there in Baba Metzia, and one day in Sanhedrin, seems to accept this distinction and seems to say, yes, mashma that way to people. And you know what? They're right. They're right. They're nechonim. They got it right. That really, if you give over money, that's not really considered to be los achmod at all. The los achmod is only when you take the item without money. So it sounds like it's a gezel. It's just outright gezel. So don't we already have a lav of losigzo? So Tosa says, yes, lav or lav b'shnei lavin. It's meant that you'll violate two different lavin. However, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't hold that way. Look in the Rambam, the Raven, everybody seems to hold that even if money is given over, if you didn't give over money and you stole it, you'll also be open los achmon in addition to gezel. But even if you gave over money, you're still going to violate los achmon. It's just according to the Ravid, that's only when the owner of the object didn't say rotsa'ani. And according to the Rambam, even if the owner of the item said rotsa'ani, question whether according to the Rambam, for tayu v'zavin, you need the owner to say rotsa'ani altogether, but whether the owner said rotsa'ani or it's the equivalent, it's clear that he sold the item benefesh chafetza, so it's as if he said rotsa'ani. Either way, even if the sale is valid, according to the Rambam, that would also be a violation of Los Achmod. But Los Tisaveh, we don't find any such a discussion. It's Mashba Los Tisaveh. You could violate even if you did not secure the item. So the Magen Mishnah says, yeah, but it's not simply that you coveted the item alone. You have to have had a scheme in your head as to how you're going to go about figuring out a method in which you're going to obtain the item. Only then do you violate lo sisave, says the Rav Barucho, says the Ben Ish Chai, that the same is true. The Ravid said this, the Magen Mishnah said this within the Ravid. The same is true within the Rambam as well. And in fact, it's very muchach. If you look at the Lashon of the Rambam, when the Rambam talks about how one violates lo sisave, so the Rambam says, kiman shechashav libo, that as soon as the person has simply thought in their mind, how they're going to go about acquiring this item, and how they're going to, you know, to engage in machinations in order to wheedle their way towards convincing the other person to sell them the item. Only then, if the person has a very elaborate thought process that they've thought out, they've already concocted a very detailed scheme, only in such an event they violate Los Tisaveh. Here too, the Ravid gives us a scriptural source for this understanding of Los Tisaveh. He says, V'raya, the taiva ena b'lei bilvad. Raya, this is in Simen Shin Nun Tes Sif Ches in the Yoruch HaShulchan. He says that the raya, the proof that it's not simply in a person's heart, but it has to be a detailed plan, is because where do we find this word of los hisabe elsewhere? The root from los hisabe, where do we find it elsewhere in the Torah? So he says, the misonanim, who had a strong desire for meat, parshas baloscha kishisabu basar from a Torah am hamisavim. So they're referred to as hamisavim. The same lashon as los hisabe, v'heim harei hishtadlu, They engaged in a whole plan. They're going to campaign and they're going to lobby Moshe that we need meat and so forth. And they're going to have protest rallies, demonstrations, you have it. So they had a whole plan in place. They had a whole movement that they put together in order that they concocted in their heads in order to be able to realize their plan of being able to have a basar. And therefore, we see from this that the lashon of Lo Sisaver also involves hatching an elaborate scheme. And that is what is required in order for somebody to be over on the lab of Lo Sisaver. So there are some question marks because we speak about Dava Hakone Makne, something that, as the Mechilta says, is something that can be acquired and can be sold. And the Rambam speaks about giving over money in order to receive the item. And so does the Raivid, just without the Rotsa Ani part. But what if you pressure somebody to give you a gift? Pressure somebody to give you a gift, is that also going to be a violation of Lo Sachmod? So here, there's actually a very interesting discussion. There's a Sefer Shailos Tshuvos, which is called Bitzel HaChokma, which was authored by Rav Bitzalel Stern, who was the older brother of Moshe Stern, who was the Debrecina Rav. Bitzalel Stern lived in Australia, of all places, so they had to run somewhere in the aftermath of the Holocaust. And he wrote some fantastic, you know, tshuvos, many on this subject, in Chelek Gimel, Lo Sachmod. And he asks this question. He points out that Rabbeinu Yonah in the Shari Tshuva seems to indicate that Lo Sachmod would be applicable even to the giving of gifts. The Smag seems to say this as well. The Smag, interestingly, seems to only talk about Lo Sachmod in the context of gifts. Which would be another teretz that if people, you know, think that Lo Sachmod is below Demei, Mash Malay, so Tosos says, so isn't that the same thing as Gezel? You could say no, because maybe Lo Sachmod applies to a case where you're pressuring somebody to give you a gift. So it's not quite, you know, Gezel, but it's also not the giving over of money, very, very interestingly. So the Ben Yonah, Shari Tshuva, talks about if you have somebody who's a very influential individual, somebody's a very influential individual, an adam nechbad, somebody, you know, who's a very important, prestigious personality, say, you know, one of the gedolei hador, comes over to you and they say that they would like an item. And he talks about it even in the context of, you know, they see a sefer that you have, they see a nice painting that you have, and they say, oh, you know, a nice car that you have, oh, that's something that, you know, I would like. So you're going to be so intimidated by the fact that this is such an important personality that you're going to give in right away. The Gemara in Ksuvos, Dapa Nun Gimel, talks about how when Rapapa was negotiating a dowry for his son, so he brought together with him, Yehuda Bar Marema, who is a very distinguished personality because he was somebody whose presence alone would cause the other family to just, you know, give in entirely. And the story says he just sat there. He didn't want to be there, but Rapapa made him be there. And the other family just gave in to all of Rapapa's demands because they didn't know whether Yehuda Bar Marema was approving or not. He was just sitting there with a poker face. And finally, the other family said to Yehuda Bar Marema, we've given into so much already. When is it going to be enough? So he said, I'm just sitting here. If you had asked me, I would have said not to give into anything until now. But sometimes a person's mere presence can have such an intimidating effect. Think of, like, you know, the Godfather. So too says the Shari Tshuva, that if you have an Adam Nechbad, it could be a violation of Lo Sachmod even just to, you know, inquire about something because the other person is going to feel an obligation to give it. And he talks even in the context of a Matana. On the other hand, the Sefer Eretz Tzvi says he asked the Imre Emes, the Ger Rebbe, this question. The Ger Rebbe thought, no, that Lo Sachmod only applies in the context of a purchase, if you're actually paying money. If you don't end up paying money, and even from the Lo Sisaver perspective, a person would have to have a scheme in which they intended to pay money at the end to violate Lo Sisaver by the same token. So then he says it doesn't rise to the level of a violation of Lo Sachmod. There's a raya that's brought from the Chofetz Chaim that I think the B'Seil HaChokma quotes the Raya that the Chofetz Chaim in his Sefer Mitzvah Sakatzer says that he disapproves of when people get married. It's another, you know, practical application. Person gets married and they're negotiating, like in the Rapapa story, they're negotiating the Nidunya. So he said that that when you put, let's say a chosim puts pressure on his prospective in-laws, they already promised that they're going to support him for learning in Kola for 1 year. He says, yeah, that's fine, but I'm learning in Kola for a year, but then I come home at night, I have to have a house. You got to get me a house too. And he, you know, pushes them, you know, to give him, you know, more stuff. So he says that's a violation of Lo Sachmo. He seems to bemoan the fact that this sort of thing goes on a lot more than it should. And that would seem to indicate that even if one is being pushed for a gift, it's a violation of Lo Sachmo. The Pisklei Choshen says that this is not entirely clear because it could be that in the context of a dowry, so we say, you know, hein hein drama nicknim ba mira, it's like a shak, it's like a maso matan when people get married. So there are all kinds of things that go back and forth, you know, who pays for what, the wedding, the flops, the, you know, there's a maso matan on both sides. So therefore, it's not necessarily a proof that this is the, in the context of matana. This might also be considered mecher, whatever either side is going to contribute to the union. So he doesn't think that's necessarily the most compelling proof, but certainly Rabbeinu Yonah seems to include matana in the equation. The B'Seil HaChokma leaves it as a safek ladina as to whether pressuring somebody to give a gift. You might think it's a kal v'chomer. Right, that if you're going to pressure somebody to give you something for money, and that's an issur, so you're going to pressure somebody to give you something without money. So kal v'chomer, that should be usur. So he says it's not entirely clear, but you know it's best to avoid because there are deus l'kan and deus l'kan. So, but he asked the obvious question: why should there be deus in the other direction? What's the thinking of the Imre Emes that it wouldn't be a problem of low sachmod? So again, the answer is based on what we mentioned before in the name of the stipler, that Lo Sachmo, the fact that a person has the machinations, the willing even at the end of the day, they'll take the step of giving over money in order to obtain the item. So it's a shear in the coveting. And it's a shear in the chimud of how much coveting, of how much desire a person has to have to carry out their plan in order to secure this item. So if a person is only willing to go so far as to say, well, I'll take it if you'll give it to me, but I'm not prepared to give money for it. So therefore, that might not be a requisite shear in order to implicate somebody for the violation of Lo Sachmo. So that would be the explanation. There was a suggestion made in the Pisklei Choshen, found this as well in the Sefer Mamon Kosher by my relative Raviol Schwartz when he speaks about the violation of Lo Sachmod. Pisklei Choshen says he saw this somewhere. Maybe that's where he saw it. I don't know. But he said he likes this idea, but that it could be a Lo Sachmod when you pressure somebody to give you money. He says that maybe Lo Sachmod isn't only violated when you're looking for an item, but maybe it's violated even when you're looking to sell an item so the person will give you money for the item. So therefore, he says it's problematic when you have Mechabim, Sfarim, if they happen to be an Adam Nichbad, like in the example of the Shari Tshuva, and they send somebody their sefer with like a little envelope, you know, included if, you know, you should want to pay for this sefer. So he says, who's going to turn down an Adam Gadol sends you a sefer? You might, the person who's the recipient might not necessarily want to purchase the sefer, but they're going to feel very uncomfortable in terms of turning down the individual. And therefore they're going to feel an obligation to fork over the money. So therefore he suggests that could be a form of chamsan, a form of Lo Sachmon, that would also be prohibited. And others say, what are you talking about? Zalman Nachem Goldberg is a little, has a piece on this. He wrote an article, on this subject, that if you look at the Rambam, so the clear implication is that it has to be an actual chepetz. You're securing a chepetz. You have to covet a particular chepetz. Coveting a person's money is not the same thing as coveting a chepetz. Zalman Nechemia suggests that this ties into the shaila as to whether there's Los Achmod for a Matana. He says, is the Los Achmod for Matana? So then what you're really looking for is the value of the money that you're getting as opposed to a specific object, then you would pay money for it, he assumes. So therefore, if you say that there's Los Achmod on a Matana, so it'd be Los Achmod with respect to wanting a person's money as well, in terms of sending them a sefer and wanting them to give you money. But if you hold it, there's no Los Achmod for Matana, so there certainly wouldn't be Los Achmod with respect to this case either. If we look at the Mechilta de Rashbi and say that Los Achmod requires a Dava, Kone, or Makne, so very difficult to say that money would fall into that category. So this is a questionable Chiddush as to whether this is really problematic from the standpoint of Los Achmod. Related question is, so we said if a momentary fleeting thought in your head that you want something without a detailed scheme as to how you're going to obtain it is not going to be a violation even of Los Isabe, certainly not of Los Achmod if you're not carrying out any scheme whatsoever, the way that we would paskin. So the question is, how detailed does the scheme have to be? Meaning that if you have in mind, I'm going to pressure this person to sell their item and I'm prepared to spend money for it. Okay, so that would seem to qualify according to the Rambam for Los Achmod. But what if your thought process is, well, I really want this house that my neighbor has. So I'm going to knock on their door and ask for the house is for sale and say, you know, if it's for sale, I'm willing to pay money for it. But if the person says it's not for sale, so then I won't push them anymore. Maybe I'll ask them one more time, but you know, I'm not going to push beyond that. So at what point does it really become Los Achmod? If you don't know that an item is for sale, you know, the Rambam talks about when the item is not for sale. Kol davar she'efshar lo shikneh mimenu, it's something that is possible to purchase from the person. V'hichbit alav bereim, and then you put pressure, you find different people to nag and needle the fellow until he's willing to sell. So he says that's the case. It's efshar shiyikneh mimenu, but not something which is necessarily for sale. Look at the formulation of some of the poskim is very, very specifically. It's, you know, davar she'eino omei limkor. It's what the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, when discussing this halakha, says, you know, explicitly as well. It's not, you know, something that's for sale. So if you ask even one time, is that an isser? So the Sma indicates when it comes to the Geneva's Das, and we say you're not allowed to be mafsir. This is in Simon Shin Chav Ches, that you're not allowed to be mafsir. Reish Chav Ches, you're not allowed to be mafsir to push somebody and to plead with somebody to be a guest in your house if you know that they're not really going to accept and you're just doing it to make it seem like you want them to be a guest in their house. But then the Sma says, but it's still like polite sometimes as a matter of etiquette to invite somebody, even if you know that they're going to say no, just to show that you would want to, you know, have them ideally. And it would just look bad to other people if you didn't ask them all together. So it'd be like an insult. So there's a certain point in which you're not mafsir and that would be okay. So he says that if you only ask them once or twice, that wouldn't be mafsir. And the Rambam specifically uses the lashon of that to be hitzir bo. So therefore the Seil HaChochma says, that the measure of hiftsir bo, of how much you would have to push somebody, would be three times. That unless you're an adam nechbad, if you're an adam nechbad, even if you ask somebody once, that could already be a problem of los achmod. But if you're not an adam nechbad, and you have in mind you're just going to ask a person once or twice, how much, you know, is that doggy in the window? Is it for sale? And if the person says no after the first time and they say no after the second time, but you have in mind you're not going to ask a third time, so then you haven't violated Los Isabe in your plan and you haven't violated Los Achmod in your implementation of how many times you asked. So therefore, it's legitimate to ask somebody once if something is for sale, maybe even twice, but you just shouldn't do it three times. How does it come up sort of like in a business, setting? So in a business setting, Rabbi Aaron Levine talks about pressuring somebody to sell at a discount. So he says, once an item is for sale, so then most poskim assume that that means that the seller is announcing that they're allowing a certain amount of negotiation, because there are negotiations that go on with pretty much everything. But if the seller says very clearly, when you ask for a discounted price, no, I'm quite confident that I'll be able to get, you know, this price that I want from other people. And if you don't want it, then it's fine. You know, I love you anyway, but I'm not selling it at a lower price. And then the person keeps on shepherding him and keeps on badgering him and keeps on grinding away at trying to pressure him to give a discount. So it says by Aaron Levine, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that this would also constitute a violation of lo sachmod. Again, this is a little bit tricky, because once because it's easier to understand that if in a case where the item was not originally for sale. But if the seller announced that the item is for sale, as I said, that does kind of connote that they're inviting a certain amount of negotiation. So you have to just be, you have to read the signals very well, according to Rabbi Levine, to understand when the person is saying, no, please don't bother me anymore. And when they signal that, so it's like they're saying Vosner in the Shevet Alevi also has this suggestion that an item can be for sale, but then, you know, when you inquire about it, and then the seller tells you, oh no, the item is no longer for sale. So then if you're going to badger the person after that point in time, it would suddenly become lo sachmod. So there presumably is such a threshold in a negotiation for an item for sale as well, when the person indicates that they're not interested in accepting a discount. So one would have to be careful about that, according to Rabbi Levine. He also talks about strong arm tactics to get somebody to sell at a discount. He ties it in to the discussion about whether lo sachmod applies to a gift, because he says that if you're pressuring somebody to sell at a discount, so you're not giving more money, you're giving less money. So giving less money is basically asking the person to give you the item partially as a gift. So that, he says, it would depend upon that machlokas. But as I said, it seems like the from the Shari Tshuva, and it seems from the Chafetz Chaim, and it seems from the preponderance of the poskim, certainly from the Smag, that pressuring somebody to give a matana would certainly be problematic. Other contemporary, you know, poskim talk about the context of a lo sachmod in the context of a broker, of when it is that you can push somebody to sell a house. So the idea of asking somebody, you know, once is okay. But again, if the person says no and you keep on pushing away, so then that's obviously a problem. This is a suggestion that one of the mechaperim of the business halacha sefer made, that if you're the broker and you're not pushing away for yourself, but you're doing it for, you know, a somebody whom you think would appreciate buying the house, so you have violated lo sachmod because it's not for yourself. But the Bitzel HaChokma has a lengthy tshuva in which he says that it doesn't matter whether it's for yourself. It is for yourself, because you're also going to get a benefit from it. So he didn't think that the fact that you're doing it on behalf of somebody else should take away from it being a violation of lo sachmod. I think that probably is mistaber. The other, you know, type of case that's spoken about is pushy. Rabbi Levine speaks about this too. Pushy telemarketers. You call somebody up, a call that you're making without knowing that the person is interested in purchasing the item. So it's okay to, you know, to call up, knock on the door, or call somebody and say, I have an item. But once the person on the other end says they're not interested, then you have to hang up if you're in the telemarketer business. Now, what is permissible, says Rabbi Levine, is that if you think that the person's saying no, simply because of the fact that they don't fully appreciate the item that you're selling, and you need to, you know, explain why this is in their best interest, so then you can give your spiel, because, you know, maybe they just have a lack of information. Again, if you're looking to sell an item, it's a question whether it's a lo sachmod issue altogether. If you're looking for them to sell an item to you, like to sell in their house or make their house available on the market so you could sell it to others, so then that would more clearly fall within the range and the realm of a potential lo sachmod issue. There is a there's a medrash that there's a Zohar that talks about how the when it comes to most of the commandments in the Losa, in the second set or the second half of the Luchos, the Ben Adam Lachavero department. So there's a psik between the lo and the next word, lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, right? Lo tignov. So the psik says the Zohar indicates that sometimes you are allowed to do these things. You know, lo, you know, it's just some, you know, this it's not always true. You know, tirtzach, then at this time we will allow you to kill. So what does that mean? That sometimes there are exceptions when it comes to lo tirtzach. So sometimes tirtzach, that you need a bezdin to put somebody to death, who's chayav misas bezdin. Sometimes in the context of lo tignov, that it's appropriate to be gonev das rabo, to connive in order to get your Rebbe to teach you Torah. If you're a dayan on a case, to figure out how to sometimes fool a person into revealing the truth. When you see that a person is prevaricating and not otherwise testifying truthfully in front of the Bezdin. And lo tinaf also that it's appropriate to figure out ways to have a child with your own wife. Some other explanation, presumably, but that's what's brought down. What about lo sa'aneh? Lo sa'aneh, there's no psik, so there are no exceptions to lo sa'aneh v'yechai yitshaker. What about lo sachmod? So here too, the Zohar says there's no psik. There's no psik. So therefore, it would seem to be across the board. But says the Zohar, to what degree is it across the board? It's across the board with respect to the types of items that are delineated in the Aseres Adibros, namely when it speaks about Beis Reyecha, Sadeo, Sharov, V'chamaro, V'chol Asher the Reyecha, it's talking about Mili D'Alma. It's talking about just kind of regular things, the part of a person's mundane existence. Obviously, you want to, especially with a wife, make your mundane existence into a spiritually edifying existence, but it's not talking about Chimuda D'Araisa. It's not talking about the Dvarim HaNisgavim, the things that are ethereal, celestial in nature, the chimuda de araisa, Torah itself, the losach. So therefore, it says the Sefer HaZohar that there is an exclusion here based on the way in which the items are described, or the types of items that are described, that only regular mundane items are subject to losachmon, but not Torah. So how does this play itself out? So Derech Pikudecha says it plays itself out in terms of the fact that normally you're not supposed to say, oh, I want to have a house which is as beautiful as this person's house. I don't want to have, I want to be as rich as this person is. You're not supposed to say that because that's also a violation of losachma, but you are allowed to say, oh, I want to be a Talmud Chacham like this person is a Talmud Chacham. I want to have their learning because that's going to motivate you to reach a higher level of Torah learning. That's perfectly fine. The problem with this is that this distinction, as the Betzel HaChokma points out, seems to be against a Mefurish Mechilta as well. Mechilta de Rashbi says that it's perfectly permissible to say, I would like my eye, Levai Einai Keino. I'd like my eye to be as nice as this person's eye. Maybe it's nice, blue, shiny eyes. I'd like it to be nice. Like his Levi Sari Kisaru, I'd like to have luxurious hair like this fellow has. That's perfectly fine because the only types of items that are described in terms of Sharova, Chamaro, Abdova, Moso, and so forth, Ma'elim Yuchadim Dram Shevshalan Labotachas Yadecha Vachabirecha Chaseron. Those are items that could come in your possession and then the other fellow won't have them. So the same thing is true. Afainli Eladova Shevshalan Labotachas Yadecha Vachabirecha Chaseron. Has to be something you're specifically taking away from your fellow. He won't have it anymore and you will have it. So he says that it doesn't really apply to simply desiring to have something as nice as what your fellow has. The one exception, of course, would be the Pasuk in Mishlei that speaks about a person's not supposed to say, I want a wife as beautiful as this person's wife. That's a Pasuk, L'sachma yofya b'lbavecha. That you shouldn't desire, oh, this person is such a beautiful wife. I want a beautiful wife like that too. That's not considered to be a proper thought process. I think I heard from Rav Shechter might say, you know, a person's not married yet, or I'd like a wife who has midos that are as good as this person's wife. That's maybe you can argue in the realm of chimuda d'araisa. But as a general rule, it would be permissible from a lo sachmod perspective to want to have an item which is as nice as the other person's item. So that can't be pshat. So maybe pshat is that normally you can't push somebody. Somebody is an skilled piano player. Somebody is a skilled musician, and they're a skilled mathematician, and you want to learn music from them. You want to, you know, be tutored in math from them, and they're not interested. So you keep on pushing them and badgering them. So that would be a violation of lo sachmod. But you have a Rebbe who's a big time chacham, and he doesn't want to teach you Torah. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't like you so much. It doesn't mean because you're a nudge. It doesn't matter. You can still nudge and bother and pester, you know, the Rebbe to teach you Torah. That's a nice pshat too. But the Aruch HaShulchan on his own seems to say that it's not a problem of lo sachmod to push somebody to teach you whatever chokhmah they have, because he said that's not a dava kodei umakne. That's not something which is generally sold. It's not a chepetz. It's not a tangible item. So he doesn't think lo sachmod would normally apply to that anyway. I think you could question that. You can question that a person's knowledge, a person's intellectual property, the skill sets that they have to be able to teach and convey, you might say is really a commodity. It really is a marketable item. And therefore, this is maybe the distinction between chimuda daraisa and other things. So the Betzel HaChokma suggests, well, maybe it has to do with desiring a mitzvah item. A person has an extra pair of tefillin, and I wanted to perform a mitzvah. He doesn't even need necessarily. It belongs to me. He doesn't want to give it to me. He doesn't want to sell it to me. And I badger him until he agrees to sell it to me. So maybe that would be okay. He points to a Yerushalmi that indicates that the companion piece of Lo Sachmon is Uksaptamam Zos Besecho Visharech and Kriyashma. Like every, according to the Yerushalmi, every part of the Aseret HaDibros has a companion piece in Kriyashma. So the indication is that Lo Sachmon applies even to wanting to buy a house so you can fulfill the mitzvah of mezuzah. So it seems that even for a mitzvah purpose, to desire an item from somebody else could be a problem of lo sachmod. Maybe it's a distinction if you wanted the house and mamela you'll put up the mezuzah, as opposed to whether it's the mezuzah itself that you're after. So he has a hard time really figuring out exactly how to apply that zohar. What's the case of chimuda daraisa that would be permitted that wouldn't normally be permitted? You could argue that maybe it's just the entire hashkafa behind the lo sachmod. The whole hashkafa behind it is, I think Rav Chaim Vital points out, is that it's an issa kina, that, you know, one of the things that removes a person from this world is having a sense of, you know, envy towards their fellow. So normally you can't be envious. Oh, this person is so rich. Oh, this person is such mathematical whiz. Oh, this person is such a fantastic musician. This person has such a great voice. You're not supposed to be envious about those types of things. But to say, oh, this person is such an amazing Tam HaChokhmah. So that's an envy, which is okay, because Kina Sofim Tam HaChokhmah. So I see the time is over. So I'll just conclude with a bracha that we should use our machshavos only for good and positive purposes. We should all be Semechim Bechokenu, happy with our lot, to the extent that we look at somebody else and have any type of envy that could be a constructive and proper thing, should only be an envy to, oh, halavai, I should be on such a high level of Torah learning. Halavai, I should be on such a high level of midos. That's something that we should always aspire towards, so that would not be a violation of lo sachmod.